Yes, it goes. Soucy off the boards. Seattle still in possession. Turning is done. He'll look it over. This way, Colin Blackwell. Tipped right on. They score! Ryan Donato out in front. On the weak side, Jaden Schwartz as it ricochets around. And with the extra man out there, it's enough. Seattle with a 2-1 lead.
The great John Forslund with the call. The Seattle Kraken snap a horrible losing skid. Beat the Washington Capitals 5-2 last night. Their record moves now to 5-12-1. Jeff Baker joins me from the Seattle Times on the Jeff Merrick Show. Jeff, first of all, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today? Do we have Jeff Baker? We will stand by for Jeff Baker to reconnect and get him on the program. Six-game losing streak for Seattle. Snap last night. Jaden Schwartz, probably his best game so far. No, was his best game so far for the Seattle Kraken. Four-point night for the former St. Louis Blue. But one of the curiosities is, as it becomes obvious that this team isn't going to be Vegas 2.0 on the ice, and we may be more intrigued about the Seattle Kraken come trade deadline time than perhaps any other time during the season. And we may have the questions about, this is a big one, David Amber and I were talking about this in the green room on Saturday, what happens with Mark Giordano? Does Mark Giordano want to stick it out and sign an extension or move somewhere and chase a Stanley Cup as his career is in the back nine? Jeff Baker joins me now from the Seattle Times. Jeff, how are you today? Thanks so much for hanging on with us.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. It's nice to see the team win a game.
Listen, rightly or wrongly, and the real answer is wrongly, expansion teams are always measured up against previous expansion teams. And unfortunately for Seattle, the last expansion team in the NHL went to the Stanley Cup final. Is anyone in Seattle at this point at all measuring up the Kraken versus the Golden Knights, or is this just too much chalk and cheese as a difference between the two?
No, I mean, I think that's a false narrative, and we've heard that a bit pop up in the last few weeks. I think it lets the team off the hook way too easily. I don't think anybody in their right mind expected this team to go to the Stanley Cup final. I do think people in their right mind expected it to be more competitive than it's been. I think they expected it to be a 500 team, close to a 500 team. And I think that's a realistic expectation based on the $650 million franchise fee, based on the advantages they were given in the expansion draft. Whether or not they chose to avail themselves of them, that's management's problem. But this team was expected to be better. The ownership has stated as much going on several years now. And I think it's realistic to expect them to be a lot better than they've been performing. And I think the people that say, well, it's going to be like the Ottawa Senators were in 1993, I think that's just letting them off the hook way too easily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's got to stop in Seattle. That's the recipe for mediocre sports franchises that go on decades. This team was expected to be competitive. It showed last night it could be competitive when they actually play 60 minutes. I think that's realistically what people can expect. Win as many games as you lose. Try to compete for a playoff spot in what's still a fairly weak division. And, there's a few surprises in this division, but it's not that surprising. And you can do better than this. You got to have goalies that stop the puck, more than eight times out of every 10. And you do that and you play for 60 minutes, a lot more can happen than a six-game losing streak. So,
well, that's the one area, Jeff, that I keep coming back to with Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times, the Kraken snapping their six-game losing streak last night, beating the Washington Capitals. That's the one thing that I keep coming back to with Seattle. Like, I looked at the team and I said, okay, first of all, where are the goals going to come from? And two, this team should have good goaltending. Driger had a great season last year with Florida. Philip Grubauer with the Colorado Avalanche as well. I did not expect, to your point, 882 save percentages and 791 save percentages. Can we look at what's happening with Seattle and say, listen, the lion's share of the issues right now is the goaltending. We've heard the old saying before, if you have a goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't, it's 100. Can the issue be chalked up to specifically they just can't get a save 18 games in?
I think a big part of the problem has been that they can't get a save when they need it. And last night's game was a perfect example. They got a save when they needed it from Philip Grubauer, not in the third period when Washington had 23 shots. It came in the first period. So Grubauer lets the first shot of the game go in the net, and that's been happening way too often with Seattle. But Seattle actually came out. The Kraken actually came out playing very aggressively, very well in that first period. And then, you know, as usual, the first mistake they make, it ends up in the back of the net. So then a few minutes after that goal, you get a breakaway chance for the Capitals. And, you know, not a full-fledged breakaway, but a decent breakaway down the left side after a turnover in the offensive zone. And Grubauer comes out, cuts down the angle, makes the save. What we've been seeing for the first month and a half of the season is that either goaltender, whether it's Grubauer or Chris Drieger, is going to take a bad angle on that shot and let the puck in the net, and it's 2-0. And when the Kraken falls down by two goals or more, they haven't won a game this year. So that game would have been over had he let that shot in. He didn't let it in, made the save. And the Kraken, to their credit, kept on coming aggressively. They played the relentless style that they were advertised as having, but really haven't shown for the entire season. You know, they'll play aggressively for a period and a half, and then they'll take the rest of the night off. Or if they get down by two goals, that's it. They kind of give up and game's over. With a few exceptions. I don't want to be too harsh on them, but, I mean, their record's very harsh, and there's a reason for it. They haven't played 60 minutes. So their goalie gave them a chance to play 60 minutes yesterday, and they came out and showed they can. Now, can they do this over and over again, night after night, for 82 games? I don't think so. But they can't do it enough to win half the games they're playing, and I don't think we've seen that out of them so far.
Can you explain the cult of Brandon Tanev in Seattle?
Yes, I can. What I just mentioned, you know, a relentless style, relentless play, giving it your all for 60 minutes, he's done that. He's been one of the few guys that's actually done that. And a perfect example would be last night where he didn't score, but Tanev, you know, in the third period, Washington gets a penalty, a power play opportunity in the last 5 or 6 minutes. They had already pulled their goalie. They get a power play opportunity. Tanev had just blocked a shot a few minutes before and had to limp off to the bench. But he's out on the ice killing the penalty. And not only is he killing it, he has a really, really, at one point, carries the puck up the ice. You know, doesn't slow down, doesn't just dump the puck down the ice. He actually rushes it up the ice, gave him a pretty good scoring opportunity. But that's what I mean by relentless play. I'm sure he was feeling the puck that he took a few minutes before, but I mean, he just kept coming, and he actually put the Caps back on their heels a little bit. And that's what I mean by relentless. And he's been playing like that the entire season. You know, he's mixing it up. He's taking on players when they take runs at the crack, and he's the first guy in there to drop his gloves and, you know, take the other guy on, and he's scoring some big goals for them. He's a guy that hasn't quit. You know, can I say that about everybody up and down the lineup? No, I can't. There's guys that have taken shifts off, guys that have taken nights off. He hasn't, and that's a big part of his cult. Also, it's the funny mugshot that he has, you know, where he's got the bulging eyeballs that goes back. I mean, that endeared him to a lot of fans. He seems to have a pretty good sense of humor, even though on the ice he's as intense as anything else. And I think that's part of it. The flowing hair probably has something to do with it. But, I mean, the guy never stops working, and that you know, for me, if you ask me, if one guy typifies what they want to be, it's him. Him and Yanni Gord. Between the two of them, they rarely take any shifts off, and the fans can see that.
With Jeff Baker here talking about the Seattle Kraken, their six-game losing streak coming to an end last night, and a snapshot of the marketplace. And you mentioned the roster construction here, and you know, for the second time, as you point out, it is a favorable expansion draft situation for a franchise. I mean, listen, you pay the amount of money that Seattle did to get in, you better get more than what teams like Ottawa had to deal with, as you mentioned, or Tampa or Anaheim. I wonder if this time around, whether it was a matter of Ron Francis making prices too high to try to pry extra out of NHL teams, or general managers just saying, you know what, we learned our lesson from Vegas. We're not going to make the same mistakes again. Like, you look at, you know, Mark Giordano, for example, and, you know, the price was set, you know, to not take Mark Giordano was going to cost a first and a third. And that was something that Calgary, as I understand it, of course, and we saw it play out, was not interested in paying whatsoever. How did you see how this team was actually constructed? Because by the end of that draft, I think we kind of all said the same thing, Jeff. where are the deals? Where are the extras? Where's the juice that Vegas got that Seattle somehow didn't?
I think it's a combination of both, and I also think analytics played a huge part in a lot of the players that Seattle did end up taking. And not only analytics, the need to preserve cap space and try to use that down the road on better players that will become available next offseason and maybe even two off seasons from now. But, I mean, regardless, you got to put a competitive product on the ice, especially in a new NHL market. This isn't the Seattle Seahawks that just waltzed into town and they're going to be treated like royalty. It's a team that nobody really knows, a sport nobody really knows all that well here, and a product in the NHL that very few people know very much about. So they got to do their part to sell this team in this marketplace. They've done a poor job of that so far, based on what they've put on the ice. So I think Francis overplayed his hand a little bit with the asking prices that he had. I think that had something to do with it. I think general managers learned their lesson, as you said, from Vegas, where they weren't going to be caught, offering up a plethora of first round picks. But I think that said, you have to come away with some picks. At least, whether they're second rounders, third rounders, you got to come away with something. I saw a few too many picks in that expansion draft where they literally took guys just for the sake of taking them and then let them walk away. You know, one guy would be John Quenville, who went to mm-hmm. Switzerland to play. I mean, there just seemed to be some wasted picks in there. And, beyond that, I think it was a fair question to ask where the goal scoring was going to come from. I think analytics played a part in it. Where they figured, they could get just enough if they had the goaltending. And so far, the goaltending hasn't measured up. So, it's possible that things could turn around. A lot of season left to go. Not that much season, mind you. If they start losing too many more games, they're never going to be able to dig their way out of this hole completely. But I think last night was a better example of what you can see. But that said, the effort has to be there. They're supposed to be playing a very aggressive, relentless transitional game, and it's taken a long time for some of these players to adapt to the system that Dave Haxtell wants them to play, and that's going to change. They're going to have to adapt a little bit quicker. I do think it's a combination of what you said. I think Francis had asking prices that were a little too high, and he didn't adjust in time to make the situation better for himself. We saw an example of a couple of guys he could have taken in that draft, opted not to, and then they ended up getting traded away for second round picks, which he doesn't have now. He ended up with nothing. So there was situations there where he could have done better. That said, like I said, nobody expects his team to go to the Stanley Cup final in the first round, but they did expect, with the rules that were stacked in Seattle's favor, for the Kraken to produce a team that at least wins as many games as it loses. And that could still happen. We'll have to see, but this first part of the season has certainly been a wake-up call for that.
Yeah, the tough thing, as you all know, is not so much the point sometimes, it's just jumping over the teams. I mean, that's maybe a worn and played cliche, but it's certainly true. How do you see the Mark Giordano situation playing itself out this season? Like, he's had wonderful individual success. Has won the Norris Trophy, was part of some really good Calgary Flames teams. He's on an expiring contract on a team that's not going to be able to do the one thing that he has remaining to do in his career, and that's win the Stanley Cup. How do you see this playing out?
Well, if the season goes like it's gone up till now, I see him getting traded at the deadline. I think this team has to show a lot more between now and early next year for him to realistically want to stay there. And I'm putting myself inside his head. I don't know. Maybe he loves Seattle enough that he would want to stay here. But, I mean, if we're talking about adding to a career resume, I don't think the Kraken has shown enough so far to let anybody think they're going to contend for a Stanley Cup in a year or two. And, realistically, he's going to be 40 by then. So, Father Time is catching up. If this team was competing for a playoff spot right now and actually showed signs it could make the playoffs, then, all bets are off. You never know in this league. Making the playoffs could be enough to go to the Stanley Cup final. Montreal just proved that a few months ago. And so, I think a lot more has to happen. I think we need a bigger sample size of games. But if the decision had to be made today, I think there's not much of a decision. I think he would be traded. Right. And I think he would probably want to be traded, but we'll see. We'll see if this team can start to measure up a little bit. I'm not trying to sound harsh. Look, I realize it's an expansion team. Guys need to get used to each other. But in no way, shape, or form is this Kraken team performing anywhere close to what the expectations were. And not just by fans and media. I'm talking about people in the front office, people above the people in the front office. I guarantee you ownership didn't spend $650 million to watch a team put out a 250 winning percentage in the first month and a half of the season. And that's got to change. Mm-hmm. And if that does change, it's possible Giordano would want to stick around. And, you know, especially if this team comes anything close to what it was advertised at. So far, it hasn't.
Last one for you, Jeff, and I thank you for your time. Always generous with it. How has the marketplace reacted? Like the sports marketplace, where do the Kraken right now fit in the sports kaleidoscope in Seattle?
Well, it's a shame, and one of the shames of this start that it's gotten off to is that it really has a wide open opportunity right now to make an impact in this marketplace. And some of the players alluded to it last night after they won. They just feel. They feel pretty badly based on how they let the fans down here based on their play. I mean, the other night they were losing 7-0 to Colorado, scored 3 goals in the last 10 minutes, you know, garbage time goals that don't mean anything. But the fans really, you know, treated them to some nice applause at the end of the game. They appreciated the effort they showed that, they, you know, they didn't just roll over and lose 10-0 at least. And then the players, I think, took that to heart. They felt badly for having let the fans down, and they showed last night that, you know, they do have something more to show other than losing night after night. The football teams here have vastly underperformed expectations mm-hmm. this season. The Seahawks are pretty much out of the playoffs. The Washington Huskies had hoped to contend for a Pac-12 title, and they've had a terrible season. So football is out of the equation right now. The Mariners didn't make the playoffs for the 20th consecutive year, and you know, they've got the Seattle Sounders that are playing well, but that's not a major professional sport in Major League Soccer. Not quite yet, like hockey is. So hockey had a unique opportunity to really make an impact here. And so far it hasn't. We've seen a lot of empty seats starting to appear at games, even though the games are technically sold out. The ticket prices online are dropping very fast. And so, you know, they got to step it up and show something here. They've got a unique opportunity, but so far they haven't taken advantage of it.
This is all great stuff. Appreciate it. Jeff, thanks so much for stopping by. Some really great insight. Really, really appreciate it here from this corner. Thanks so much for this.
No problem. Anytime.
There he is. Jeff Baker covers the Seattle Kraken, the Seattle Times. This is a tough. I'll tell you, you know, I just got a text from a buddy of mine and said, man, it's amazing how much Vegas has raised expectations for what expansion teams are and how they are expected to perform. Now, on the one hand, you can look at the entry price into the NHL, and that's $650 million. And for that, you should, well, and they do, they have the opportunity to put together a competitive team. But the one thing that I asked before the expansion draft was, do you want to make a team for right now, or do you want to make a team for 5 years from now? And it seems as if Seattle kind of says, well, we want to do both. We want to make this as competitive as we can right now, but also we want to make sure that we avail ourselves to be able to compete in a more traditional growth sense in the next 4 or 5 seasons. Can they get there? Well, right now, the winning ain't there, although that's a big one last night against the Washington Capitals, and always great to see Jaden Schwartz perform the way that he did last night, one of my favorite players in the NHL, full stop. The story continues, but man, call this the Vegas effect. The massive disappointment in the Kraken. This is how expansion teams are supposed to perform, folks. Coming up in hour two, Sean Reynolds will stop by. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets. They've lost a pair, but they'll face off against the Penguins tonight, looking to snap that. But up next, to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, a big shutout win over the Islanders last night. Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet. Hour two on the horizon. Keep it here. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
It didn't look really comfortable on their setup, and then there are times on that 4-on-3 that that's the case.
Marner's got a break. He's in. Shorthanded. Scores! Mitch Marner, a shorthanded goal, and the Leafs strike first.
Welcome to hour two of the program. Sean Reynolds, bottom of the hour. We'll catch up on the Winnipeg Jets. They've lost a pair, but they're facing off against the Pens tonight, looking to snap that. In the meantime, Mitch Marner with a pair of goals last night. The Maple Leafs beat the New York Islanders by a final score of 3-0. Joseph Woll with his first career NHL shutout, swarmed afterwards. And he gets the puck and he gets the memories and he gets the first career shutout. Anthony Stewart here worked the game last night alongside Jennifer Botterill and David Amber. He joins me now. What's up, Stewie?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How's it going? How goes it?
It goes good. How did we get you out of an arena? I thought you lived at rinks, Stewie.
You should hear my day today. I got to go assist the worker, the team today at Maddie Nichols Gym. So I'll be a part-time trainer today. And then I got practice tonight. So it doesn't stop.
Okay, hang on.
It
does not Let stop. Me, hang and... on, hang on, hang on. Before we get into Maple Leafs here, I want to ask you about one of my favorite people in the world, and that's Matt Nichols, trainer to the stars. First of all, do you still hold the record at his gym for trap bar?
I do, and I'll tell you a quick story about that. Maddie would not let me go higher than 550. He's like, if you can do 550, you can probably do 600 or 650, but he's like, what's the point? What is the point?
So he never let you go over 550?
No, so I think Darnell got up to 500. There's a couple guys in the 500 club, but he would not let me go higher than 550.
Who else is it? I'm curious about that. I love Trap Bar. Who else is in the 500 club? You mentioned Nurse, but who else?
I'm trying to think. I don't think Sagan's up there, but Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson touches 500. I think he's around 500. So I don't think anyone, but Matty just says, guys, there's no point. So I think once you hit 500, that's the max.
Okay.
And I also just came back from Just Hockey buying sticks, and I saw Caberle there too. He's buying shin pads for his kids. So it's a small hockey world, as they say.
So Thomas Caberle is the coach of the 2012 North York Rangers, and I think they're top team in the province for that age group.
Yes, they are.
Sick team, apparently. Yeah. We're waiting for our squad to face off against them for a lesson. we'll see what happens there. Okay, so I want to ask you about the Maple Leafs last night. Actually, I want to ask you about the Maple Leafs weekend. How did you see both games? They get blanked against the Pens, and then they blank the Islanders the night before. What do you think of both before we start to drill down? Give us your wide brush thoughts here.
I think there's a lot more positive than negatives, and it wasn't pretty, but as the coaches used to say, it's not the art business. It doesn't have to be pretty. And I think that was sort of the issue with the team in the previous seasons, that they got into too many track meets. They were trying to go and play a brand of hockey that wasn't successful in the playoffs. And I think with this group now, knowing that the eventual goal is to have that playoff success, they need to play a certain way. So it's not sitting back, it's just being defensively aware. And you saw that Islanders game last night, that neutral zone, they just clogged it. They supported the puck, they took away lanes. Islanders couldn't even get in the zone. I think they had 9-10 shots after two periods. That's the brand of hockey you have to play. They have the talent to take over the game at any given time, but you can't just turn it into a track meet. So what I'm really impressed is with this team is, obviously you have the big four, but just the bottom six, you legit have a third line. And you have a legit fourth line where, you know, typically in the past, the bottom six were basically just, biding time for the top six to get out there. But the Kasha line, the Camp line, and the Spezza line, they've been playing some great, great hockey. So it's time to give them some flowers, because they're definitely a big part of the early success for this Maple Leafs team.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I am, I can't believe he actually skated off after hitting his head on the goalpost yesterday. But Andre Kasha seems like, and... You know, listen, we know he's had injury problems for a long time, but when you look at the way the guy competes, you say to yourself, I'm not surprised that this guy's had injury issues. This guy goes at every situation really hard. And there he is last night. I think it was when it was 3-0, still, and late in the game, still going hard to the net, smacks himself off the post. And like, Stewie, don't you, like, when you're in the NHL and you're up 3-0 and the game is over and the minutes are ticking off here, don't you just sort of tailor your performance to the score and to the clock? Like, I'm watching Kasha last night. I'm like, what? Why are you doing this? Like, this game is over.
He reminds me of a former teammate in Patrick Coletta, where we'd be winning 5-0 and he would just go and run a guy for like no reason at the end of the game. It's like, guys, why? But kudos to Dubas and getting a player like that competes, because it's contagious. You know, there's some nights, and you don't like to hear this as a fan, like, you know, you take some nights off because it's such a long season. But when you see guys like Kasha and Kampfa camp, just blocking shots, competing, going to the net. It's contagious, and you can't really shut it down because you've got these guys here that are just working and digging and grinding. So it has that contagious where you can't help but, you know, compete. So I think that is the identity of the team that they're starting to create right now, and it's those guys have a big part of that.
You know, when you have Pierre Engvall on that left wing spot, and we've seen both Engvall, we've seen Nick Ritchie as well. When you have Kamp, Kasha, and Engvall, you look at it and you look at the way they perform. And the last time I checked, and this may have changed because it was a couple of games ago, they had exactly zero offensive zone starts. All their starts were in the defensive end. You look at this and you say, this is like a European grind line. Like, isn't that how it kind of feels to it?
It is. And then, you know, we talked about it on the radio program last year and the last couple of seasons. How many goals did they let in off of faceoffs at the beginning of a period, at the end of a period?
Yeah.
Remember that?
And
even on the penalty kill. But when you have guys that, you know, 60% of the time are going to win the faceoff, or if they do lose it, are going to compete to get into shot lanes and blocking shots. How many shots have these guys blocked? And, you know, that was a trend last year where we're talking about you're not getting in lanes. So these guys are just competing. And what I like about it is it's not about the numbers. I know Cash has got 5 goals this year, but they're summed up by the line and the importance of the line and the success of the line. And whereas in years past it was, well, this guy on this line is not going, this guy's not going as well too. So it's great to see Engvall, regardless of his numbers, he's skating well, he's keeping it simple. So that whole line has been great for this team.
So Mitch Marner last night with a pair of goals, and despite the cold start to the season, everything looks to be fine in Marnerland, as many observers had predicted. It was too good to stay that cold for too long. So are you now prepared to say that contract is a bargain?
Are you you're following Ailish's Twitter account, dude. I saw that tweet.
That's exactly what I was going at. Exactly what I was going at.
Yeah, and you can't judge this group by the numbers, and you got to look at a big picture right now. They got their money, they got their term, and say what you want. The media and the pressure, it does get to them. These guys are young guys, and I think they're finally maturing, and that's what takes time to mature and really focus on what's important. And I think for these guys, as young as they are, they want to win. They want to win, because if you win in this market, you will be a legend. You will not have to pay for a drink or a steak at Harbor 60 for the rest of your life. You will get a statue. So I think these guys, they understand the importance of what they have here, and they have a special window to get it done, because if they do it, their legacy in Toronto, I think they'll be legends. So for Marner, again, he's gone hot and cold, but he is a top player in the National Hockey League, the way that he can control the play and facilitate the puck. Nylander as well has been playing great. Tavares has been scoring some timely goals, and Matthews as well too. So again, it's a perfect clicking, a perfect system that they have going on right now. But again, you can't help but compliment the bottom six. That's a big part of the success as well.
I am going to throw a dart here and guess that every time William Nylander scores a goal, your phone explodes.
Yeah, and it's from you. I literally get
more
a text from you every time. Willie. Sorry to throw you under the bus there, but
it can't be. No, it can't. No, I'm saying it can't just be me, though. It's got to be like a
on
lot
Twitter,
of people
though, on Twitter. No, Twitter. On Twitter now, I'm a reformed Nylander fan. So once I came up with the term Nylander, I think a lot of the fans saw that I'm on his boat. And, you know, I tweeted out the pair of skates that I bought for charity with his signature on it too. Mm-hmm. So I'm warming up to the, and I think I am an official, unofficial member of the Nylanderthals.
All right, very good. To another Swede, or a couple of Swedes we should throw in here. What do you make of Sandin and Liljegren at this point? You have a thought on those two?
I think they're playing great, and I'm just, you know, a little, you know, upset that they're sort of thrown into, you know, getting this opportunity now. Why not last year, where there was less pressure? There's so much voting on this season that these guys now are thrown into these minutes, and they got to play some, you know, some big minutes, and they're paired as young guys. So I'd like to see them maybe get this opportunity maybe last year, but they're making the most of their opportunity. Say what you want. Sandin's getting some meaningful minutes, 16 and a half, you know, Liljegren's at 15. So they're going to make mistakes, but they compete, they make plays, and what I like about it is they're poised. They're not afraid to make a mistake, because they always recover, they always support each other. So again, there's going to be some growing pains, and we can have that debate till the cows come home, that it really takes until you're about 26, 27 to really mature, and I think they're well on their way to being quality and high-quality National Hockey League defensemen.
24. That's my number. 24. I think
you should have saw Jay Bouwmeester at 27. You see Bouwmeester at 27, you're like, okay, he's arrived.
I think you know what you have by the time. I think you can safely, there's always going to be outliers, but I think that's true of every position outside of goaltending. You kind of get an idea, like you really have a good idea of what you have by the time they're 21 or 22, and they're at the height of their powers at 24, maybe 25.
What about Giordano?
He's a freak. He's a total freak. Like he was, I'll tell you, it's funny because I was just talking about Giordano a second ago with Jeff Baker. Like, what's the decision they're going to be? You know, come trade deadline time, he's on the expiring contract. What does Seattle do? Knowing you could ring the bell with a trade there, Giordano was like the first guy because he had that contract issue with Daryl Sutter. I think
he
that
went to Russia,
he wanted the one way, and they're offering a two-way, and that's they wouldn't, but I better have the details right here. That seems to be my memory. They were offering a two-way, and he didn't want that. He wanted the one-way deal. So he went to the KHL, and he was the first player that I saw, I can't think of another example, who went to the KHL and came back a better player. Like normally, it's like you go to the KHL and your game's gone. But he came back better. It was weird.
I didn't come back. I'm still in Russia with half my money there too. So,
yeah, some of your money's still in the KHL. You go back and get it one day.
It's coming. Yeah, the rubles. Yeah. I'm checking my ruble account to see if it's been filled. It's been sitting empty for about 5 years.
don't hold your breath on that one. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about this team this season, Stewie, is that, you know, no matter where they're at, you know, second place in the division, trailing only the Florida Panthers, fifth overall in the NHL. In a lot of ways, you know, what's happened in the playoffs kind of sucks for Maple Leafs fan twofold. One, because it's a drag to see your team go out early in the playoffs. But two, it removes the joy from the regular season. Because as happy as you want to be for Joseph Woll in his first career NHL shutout, that's great. Mitch Marner has turned things around. We're starting to see, like, as I mentioned, the Euro grind line on line three, and things coming together. A lot of the potential for joy for Maple Leafs fans, you know, kind of left in the playoffs, because ultimately that's where all the answers are. That they can do, like, John Tavares can score 45 goals. William Nylander can score 50. Austin Matthews can win the Rocket Richard. And Mitch Marner can be in consideration for the Art Ross by the end of the season with, like, Dreisaitl and McDavid. And the real question is, can they do anything in the playoffs?
Yeah, but you just can't turn it on, right? You got to check a bunch of boxes, you know, that were question marks, you know, before the season even started. And I think one of the major questions is the team going to miss Freddie Anderson? And obviously not, because Jack Campbell's been playing great. I think I mentioned last night on the program that he's 27-7-3, I think, since last year. So he's arrived where there were some big, big question marks about his durability. And, you know, Mrazek's had some issues now with his health, but Woll seems like he's ready for an opportunity, right? There was questions about the power play. Yeah, it struggled as of late, but they're still eighth. Right, the penalty kill is doing really, really good. So they're not scoring a lot of goals. I think they're in the bottom third in goals for, but their defense is great. So those are questions that you check in the box that sort of now prepare you for that playoff run. So again, there's a lot more positive than negatives, and I think this year could be the year. But we were also saying that 2 years ago. I think this year was the year. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
they're more rounded. They're more rounded, though. They're more rounded. They have more depth. They legit have a legit third line. The fourth line, I'm telling you, if you go through the game tape and you look at the spray charts and the heat map, Simmons should have 5-6 goals by now. Spezza should be at 7, you know, at 12-14 points. So they're playing good. So those questions that were sort of, you know, big question marks in the past, they have the depth. They have the depth, and they have guys performing you know, at an elite level as well.
You know, one of the things that, and you mentioned the power play is improved, but one of the things that I think we all wonder about too is how, when you consider the personnel that's on it, Stewie, how isn't that power play automatic?
Well, you know, if you have too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, you make the pie doesn't come out as great as opposed to.
But Edmonton's got like a ton of cooks too, but they make it work.
Yeah, well, maybe that's a coaching thing where, you know, again, I have Mike Zigomanis come out to my practices to do power play. I'm going to have Matt Foy come out because I'm still trying to solve my
Matt
own problems.
Matt Foy, whereas, oh wow, great guy, wow. Yeah.
Whereas, awesome, well, dude. my power play was stand in front of the net as Big Buff takes a clapper off your chin and it goes in the net. So that's what I was used to. So again, it's a big, big thing, and teams now are so well prepared. They know every single tendency, so you always got to evolve as a power play, and because you know, some of these penalty kill units are elite and they're so prepared. So it's a tough thing, and everybody's going through it. You got to find a way to get it done, especially in the playoffs.
Certainly true. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes here, just blank canvas, hand over the audio space to you, because I think we're all stunned when we saw it. I'm just going to say a name. We all know what we're referring to. And Stewie, you just go. Josh Hosang.
I told you so. And I was echoing his sentiments since last year, because I've seen it with my own eyes last January on the ice with the pros before they've gone back to the National Hockey League. This kid is a tremendous talent. And yes, he had his question marks, how is he off ice? But he came into camp humble. He had perfect interviews saying, I'll sharpen skates. You know, I'll do the Gitch laundry. I don't care. I just want an opportunity. And he's making the most of it. So for him, you know, people are expecting him now to be crying to his agent saying, I need a trade or I need a contract. He's going about his business. He's not worried about the big picture. He's coming and being a consummate pro. And I think that's going to work out really, really well for him. So whether he gets the call this year or gets the NHL two-way contract, I think they probably have a long-term plan for him too. But if he continues to perform and this team struggles, offensively, I would not be surprised to see him in a Leaf uniform. But again, tremendous talented kid. Oh, yeah. I'm really, really happy for his success, because he's definitely earning an opportunity, and it's great. And again, the talent is there. Just keep it up.
Oh, so offensively, just such a delight, just like so much fun to watch. Okay, I want to get off the Leaf. No,
can you mention quickly, about how good he was back in the day with the Marlies? Just please tell
okay,
me.
So here, okay, so here, story. Okay, so here, this was him with them, because I watched that Marlies team a lot in the GTHL. So he played on a Marlies team that had Connor McDavid on it, that had Sam Bennett on it, that had really good, Jeremiah Addison was on that team, Jaden Lindo, Roland McEwen. Like, this was a really, really high-end squad. And Hosang, like, I remember the first time I watched him, I'm like, oh, wow, okay, first of all, Connor looks like a pro. He's fast, but he just, like, you know how minor hockey players, youth hockey players can look like youth hockey players because they want to toe drag everybody and go through it? Like, that was Hosang. Like, he would deke everybody out and then regroup in the neutral zone just so he could do it again. Like, he was that guy. He was like, I'm the best player on this ice, and I'm going to show you that I'm the best player on the ice. And if he caught it the first time, I'll do it again to make so there's no mistakes, that I am supremely skilled. Connor looked like a pro. And when I first saw Connor with the Marlies, I'm like, that guy, I was there with Jeff Jackson, who's now his agent. I'm like, he looks like a professional hockey player. Well, he's fast and he's skilled and all that, but just like, you've seen it, Stewie. Guys that just look like they're pros. Connor was that guy. But Hosang on that team was ridiculous. He was the guy, and we see this from time to time, that you can tell is too good for the league that he's in. And you see it a lot in minor hockey. He was a guy that made it obvious. Every time he touched the puck, he was too good for minor midget. He was too good. He was just flat out too good. He was dominant, Stewie.
Yeah. And
Connor
quick story
just
about,
ripped
McDavid
it up.
Was, yeah, quick story about McDavid was, I had a buddy of mine that was coaching. He just finished pro hockey, and he's like, I was on the ice with this kid named McDavid, and he's 13 years old. He's in Pee Wee, and he's like, I'm telling you, he's a better hockey player than I am now, and I just retired last year, and he played some NHL. So at 13, there was pros saying this kid's going to be the next one. So it's great to see, you know, how these kids are phenoms at such a young age.
Yeah, and you know what? We're seeing a lot, whether it's, you know, Hosang and McDavid, and I talked about Mangiapane off the top as well. Like, we're seeing, is it just me, or are we seeing more goal of the year candidates on a consistent basis than ever before? Like, every single night, oh, man, did you see that Carter Verhaeghe goal last week where he's coming down the boards? Like, that's another one. Like, I'm just like, oh, nothing's going to beat that McDavid against the Rangers. Then he does it against the Winnipeg Jets. Then I see the Carter Verhaeghe. Then I see Andrew Mangiapane. I can't remember, Stewie, the last time it was like this. And I'm trying to figure out a reason why. And you might say, like, oh, well, you know what? There's more power plays. There's a stricter enforcement on cross-checking. Yeah, these things may be true. But I don't know. Like, I know we're still relatively early in the season. But, Stewie, just me, are we seeing more goal of the year candidates like every couple of days in this league? And then Hosang Saturday.
Yeah, we're witnessing the evolution of hockey, and I urge everybody, you watch it on TV, you watch it from the 300 level, but go watch a game or a practice, you know, minor hockey, OHL, pro, just from ice level, and just see the speed. And, you know, I remember being on the ice a couple of months ago with Tom Wilson, and I'm like, this guy will kill me. Like, how is he going that fast? Like, I was afraid for his safety. I'm like, if this guy blows a tire, he might hurt himself. That's how fast and explosive some of these guys are going. And then now you add the skill and the puck skills that they do. These kids can go through the danglers. They can. These kids are doing Michigans on the way to doing Michigans, like triple Michigans in one shift. It's amazing seeing some of these kids and the skill. And I think the NHL is going to be in great hands the next couple of years, the next decade for sure.
Is it a hot take if I say the Michigan is boring now?
What do you want to see? A backhand Michigan? What do you want to see? A goalie Michigan?
Sure. I don't know. A goalie Michigan with something. Yeah, instead of shooting it down, then I would see you scoop it and throw it. Now that's Anthony Stewart. Yes, let's go. I'm into that. Let me transition out of this conversation by giving you a quiz. Okay, I thought of you the other week when Braden Coburn retired. I thought of you, Anthony Stewart, because with that retirement, the official retirement, he hadn't played in a while, but the official retirement of Braden Coburn, then there were four. There are still four members of the Atlanta Thrashers playing in the NHL right now. Now, there are two coaches who used to play for Atlanta, Brad Larson and Andrew Brunette, but there are four players who lace them up in the NHL still to this day that played for the Thrashers. Can you name them, and who do you think the last Thrasher will be?
I'm sure one of them is Blake Wheeler, right?
Correct.
Ooh, so I'm trying to think. Is there some more guys on Winnipeg there that was there? Is Little officially retired?
No.
Is that one of them?
Nah, he's LTI'd again. Yeah. That's an asterisk.
Is Pavlik still around, or is he under a rock with Yuri Talusti?
No, Talusti.
You stumped the Schwab. The Schwab on that one. That's kind of crazy. I'm trying to think. Big Buff's on the lake somewhere near my brother in Minnesota. Nah, he's done. Fishing. I don't know. Who is it?
So you got Evander Kane in San Jose.
Yeah.
And these next year, you'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Andrew Ladd.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Ladder. Yes.
Right. And I thought you might lead with this one. Zach Bogosian.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My memory is so bad. That's so bad. That's crazy. But no, those guys are still all great players. And again, I like to see Ladd. I love that he got another opportunity. They thought that he was on Robidoux Island and he was done. And he's got a second opportunity, lease of life with Arizona. And Bogosian, right? That's what I think the Leafs are missing right now. They're missing a Bogosian-type player. So it's going to be surprising to see what they do at the deadline here. But those guys are all great guys, great teammates. And you know this. You ask anybody about their time in Atlanta, regardless of the fanfare and all that, they love the city. They love the market. It was a great place to live. A great place to raise a family. I had an amazing time playing in Atlanta.
Stewie, how'd you like direct flights everywhere?
Ooh, perfect. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Atlanta. Direct flights everywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I am curious because, you cover the Toronto Maple Leaf beat on television, but you also pay attention to the rest of the league. What else intrigues you these days? Like, what raises the Stewie eyebrow?
I talked about this yesterday, the success of the Calgary Flames, and everyone was scratching their head. Why did they bring in Sutter? And great job by Treliving by recognizing that he was the coach that was most suitable for this group. And he has that buy-in, and these guys are buying in. And look at the season that Shillington's had. You know, what's his name? Hall 2.0. He's coming in playing great hockey. And I said I'm the most surprised that he's had zero sound bites this year. You'd think he'd have two or three right now in Sutter with, going after the media. So I think the Calgary Flames have been the biggest surprise right now. We knew that division was wide open, but the Flames having this much success this early is definitely surprising.
And you know what? Mangiapane's been such a great story. I know I've talked a lot about
Olympics.
Today,
Olympics.
So Friedge and I were talking about that off the top of the show. See, I do wonder about wingers for Team Canada. And the question that I do have is how many natural wingers are there going to be versus centers that end up just playing the wing? Like, Mitch Marner's going to be there. Brad Marchand is going to be there. But how many centers do you think end up like Patrice Bergeron playing the wing on this team? And that's where I think a guy like Andrew Mangiapane may feel a pinch in that situation. Because I know there's a talk about, does Zach Hyman end up going as well? And does Hockey Canada treat that like Crosby Kunitz and say, well, maybe, Kunitz, but he has the chemistry with Crosby, so we're not going to mess with that. Did they say the same thing about Zach Hyman and Connor McDavid? I don't know the answer to any of it. But the thing that I wonder about is Mangiapane, two things. One, the way he answered the call for Hockey Canada last year for the World Hockey Championships, and Hockey Canada remembers things like that. As you well know, Stewie, because you went through the Hockey Canada program, they have a long memory, both positive and negative. Positive and negative. And when you stand, when you step up for them, that buys you a lot. That's why it's very rare, if ever, although last year was COVID, so you can understand, rare, if ever, that people say no to the program. He's playing his way into a conversation for him. Like 15 goals?
Yeah, see, he has 25. See, he has 23, 24 goals when it's time to make this team. How do you keep him off? But I think it's going to be tough because you're going to have guys that are sort of on the bubble that's going to be tough to say no. Barzal, O'Reilly, Scheifele. It's going to be tough to jump heads over heels, you know, over those guys. But again, if you have 25 goals at that time, and I'm sure injuries and illness and guys saying not wanting to go is going to really sort out a lot of these problems. But I think the biggest question mark is goaltending. And, you know, is Fleury going to be your starter this year now that he's playing some great hockey? That's another debate for another day, though.
Well, it's interesting, you know, do you have the, you know, which Marc-Andre Fleury, like, who's the real Marc-Andre Fleury? The one that we saw, you know, was it 2.5 weeks ago against the Winnipeg Jets on a Friday night, the day before Jeremy Colleton got dismissed? Because that Marc-Andre Fleury, I think a lot of us are saying, no thanks. Or do you want the Marc-Andre Fleury we saw last night, specifically in the first two periods against the Vancouver Canucks, at which point Canadian hockey fans will say, we'll take that guy? I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
I'll tell
you were going to say, I thought you were going to say, hopefully we don't see World Junior Fleury.
I cannot, sir, continue to roast him over that one, firing it in the shin pad. I'm not going to let that define Marc-Andre Fleury. So how deep did your eyes roll back in your head when that happened?
Oh, man, I was like, this sucks. And it was funny. Like, nobody could do an interview because everyone was devastated and crying. And the first thought that was, I was not upset because I'm like, I don't even know how I'm getting back to Kingston. I don't even have a ride. So that was my main thought after losing that gold medal. I had bigger problems.
How am I going to get home?
Life problems. Yeah.
How am I going to get back? What's this going to mean? Yeah, I'll tell you what. You know who's playing his way, like, right into the conversation? Man, Mackenzie Blackwood looks good. Mackenzie Blackwood in New Jersey looks really good. Like, Carter Hart's having the bounce back and really happy about that. I know last year was very much a mental challenge for everybody, but specifically for young athletes and specifically that young athlete. So I'm glad to see Carter Hart turn things around. I don't know that anyone can make any type of prediction about a netminder like Carey Price at this point, but you know, the ones to me that are intriguing, Mackenzie Blackwood and Carter Hart.
Mm-hmm. And you did pick Hart for the Vezina, I think, last year. But
I picked Shesterkin this year. I feel a little bit better about my choice this year than what happened last season. Well, you know,
yeah, it's going to be.
The interesting thing about the Flames, Corey Mastisak, with this little nugget the other day, tweets out one of the more unique stats in the NHL is just how the Calgary Flames are destroying the East and can't do a thing against the West. Against the East, they're 11-1-2. Against the West, they're 0-2-3.
That's crazy.
Like, there's some weird stats, like SN stats. Steve Fallon, right, over the weekend. Calgary Flames, the first team to record 7 shutouts in their first 19 games since the forward pass was allowed in 1929. That's, by the way, forward pass in all 3 zones. It was always allowed in the defensive zone. But that's, like, a weird one. Like, there's a lot of bizarre stats. Like I said, Andrew Mangiapane, 15 goals, 2 assists. And we had Bieksa roasting him on Hockey Night on Saturday for the Cy Young numbers, but hey, man, 15 goals is hard. 15 goals is tough.
But I think that's just that Daryl Sutter type hockey, right? It's I wouldn't say it's low event, but again, they just clog the neutral zone. They play good team defense. And, you know, Markstrom's been playing good, and Darth Flader, too, has been playing good as well. So it's great to see Calgary because, again, a lot of people had them written off this year, too, and everyone thought they're going to be blowing it up. Out goes Monahan, out goes Goudreau. And I know we're in Calgary right now, so I know they're listening, too. But I don't even think those fans, their fans, expected this success early on in the season.
Johnny Gaudreau looks great, bud. Like, it wasn't that long ago.
It's his extension. Let's talk extension time. I love talking extension, and I remember being on the program, and I said, I don't know where, but I said Hyman was going to get his $25 million or his $30 million What is Johnny Hockey getting?
But you want to give everybody
he's
that.
He's getting his $40 million. He's getting his $40 million somewhere.
You got Gaudreau getting $40 million. You got like Tyler Pitlick getting like $6 million next year for the Flames as well. Veteran Brad Richardson's getting a 5-year extension at 36 years of age. I would love it if you were a general manager, Stewie. You would be flat out fun. You would do the best interviews.
Flat out fired.
No, man. You'd do the best interviews. You'd have the wildest contracts. You'd have
be tweeting about the team mid game. Like, look at this period, brutal.
You wouldn't even have like end of season meetings with the guys. You just like send them gifts, which is what your thoughts
here's
on the
yeah. Here's how your season went, and this is what you're making next year. 0.0. I'd have them all ready to go. Send it to their agents.
Stewie just sends a gift for their exit meeting.
That'd be hilarious.
Oh, you'd be the best GM, bud. I love it. Okay, Stewie, I guess you probably got to get back to a rink somewhere or get to the gym. Say hi to Matty Nichol for me. I haven't seen his new gym yet, but I heard it's gorgeous. I heard it looks beautiful, so very much looking forward to seeing that. You be good, Stewie. We'll catch up soon.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeff. Appreciate it.
There he is, Anthony Stewart, the great Anthony Stewart from the NHL on Sportsnet. Man, would he make a great general manager. Just gifts instead of press conferences, and there is no one better than at Stu Monroe, as you find him on Twitter, Anthony Stewart. We're going to get on the Winnipeg Jets page here in a couple of moments. Sean Reynolds stops by. They'll play the Penguins tonight. Little speed bump right now for the Winnipeg Jets. Anything to be concerned about? Lost two in a row. We'll get into that with Sean Reynolds. Also, man, what a bounce back season for Pierre-Luc Dubois. 10 goals in 17 games after last year. We kind of all went, where did the old Pierre-Luc Dubois go? Well, he's back. He's returned. He's back like a vertebrae, and he is helping keep this team going. We'll talk about the Jets. We'll talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois and the rest of Winnipeg with Sean Reynolds from the NHL on Sportsnet in a moment. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
Colson in the jet zone looking for the puck. Andrew Kopp comes up with it, gets it outside the line. Hamonic slid it across, but right to Nick Ehlers, who spins his way in, cutting towards the goal. He scores! What an individual effort by Nikolai Ehlers, who spun off the boards to the middle and roofed it past Demko to make it 2-1.
Let's just, before we have a conversation about the Winnipeg Jets, let the song play a little bit as it trails off. And welcome back, Lance Kennedy, playing the keyboards, back at Master Control. Innocence by Harlequin, 1980, Lance-a-roo. Oh, making this old guy happy. Thank you, Lance. From there, we dovetail to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet, covering the Winnipeg Jets. Sean, how are you today?
I'm doing great, especially because he played me in with Harlequin.
Isn't that great?
Boy. Thank you very much. That's excellent.
I have not heard that. I always sound so old when I say things like, I have not heard that song. But it's true. Like, I forgot how great a song that was. And you know what I'll be listening to now, Sean, at 2:01 Eastern when this show goes off the air, off the YouTube for me to hear Innocence by Harlequin. First of all, how you doing, Sean? You been good, pal?
I've been great, yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, it's, listen, go watch hockey games, come back and talk about them. Okay. Every 2 weeks a paycheck shows up and someone yells stop thief. That's what my life is kind of about.
Quite the life we've got here, yeah.
It beats working, pal. Jets and Pens tonight. To business here. Pretend that we actually work for a living. Jets and Pens tonight. Winnipeg on a little mini two-game skid here. How do you look at these last two games? Blips on the radar, legitimate speed bumps. What are these last two games for Winnipeg?
I mean, that first game is, a shootout loss to the Edmonton Oilers. Flip a coin in that game right now. You're talking about two of the best teams in the Western Conference, potentially the two best teams in the Western Conference who met. The game before that, the Jets had, won handily over the Oilers, but the Oilers had come off a long road trip. So yeah, I see it as a schedule thing, right? Like, that game goes either way. If the Jets win it in the shootout, we're talking about this entirely differently. But they go up against the Oilers, who take everything. It takes everything you have to shut down those guys. those stars that they have on that team. And the Jets looked like they spent everything and didn't have a lot left for that game against Vancouver. I mean, it was the first game, and I don't know how long that the Jets hadn't scored a point or come away with a point. So I don't think it's like a speed bump. I don't think it's a blip on the radar. The schedule didn't line up in their favor, but I fully expect them to be kind of back on track here tonight.
I'll tell you, I want to get to this Pens game here in a second, but that game against the Oilers, even before it began, like, correct me if I'm wrong, that felt like a playoff game. Like, that's the first time this year that I said, this game feels like playoffs. That's how it felt to me.
Well, and it's interesting because you've got two teams that met in the playoffs last year, and the Jets came in with a kind of white knuckle trying to win a defensive series against a highly offensive team, and they pulled it off, right? And so what we saw in that first game when the Jets, you know, won and again kind of shut down those two big players for a lot of the game, or at least forced them onto the same line. And I think when you force McDavid and Draisaitl onto the same line, it's a sign that you're winning that battle. And we saw the Jets do that to them last year in the playoffs. We saw them do it there again. So I thought it was important for the Oilers in that next game that they try and keep those two players apart, which they did, and had the patience, and end up that patience pays off as they win it in the shootout in a low scoring affair. But yeah, I think what you saw in that game, Jeff, is the Oilers know that if they run into the Jets in the playoffs, they know exactly how the Jets are going to try and beat them. These are two teams who are capable of scoring goals in bunches, but the Jets don't think that they can win that battle against that team. So it's going to be a defensive, grinded out affair. And I thought for the Oilers, they wanted to show that they can win that style of game, if not to show their fans or the Jets, to show themselves that they can play that kind of game, because they played the five straight games against the Jets where it didn't work.
You know, while we're discussing recent Jets history here, going back, was it 2.5, maybe 3 weeks, the Friday night Winnipeg-Chicago game, the last game behind the bench for Jeremy Culleton, you know, watching that one, and Chicago's just flat. Like, there's nothing there. Kyle Connor looks like, you know, he's channeled the ghost of Rocket Richard. Like, he's got a million scoring chances. He's snapping in a couple. Did you walk away from that game like a few other people did? I texted Elliot that night and I said, I think this might be it for Culleton. Did you walk away from that game saying, I think the Jets may have just put the final nail in the coffin here?
Yeah, I did. And I talked with some of my sources who were in town with the Blackhawks, and they had fully expected, you know, I think one of them I had a conversation with in the second intermission, and you could just see that the Chicago Blackhawks were an uninterested team in that game. They did not look like they were playing hockey. And as good as the Jets looked, it looked that way against a team that just was not engaging at all. I didn't expect, I wasn't sure that he would be gone right away after that, but I had asked and said, you know, it doesn't look like he's long for staying behind that bench, and the expectation there was that he wasn't going to make it through the week. In fact, the expectation is with, you know, a lot of the stuff that was happening at that time around the Chicago Blackhawks, that maybe it would have happened earlier if it wasn't for the fact that they didn't want to look like they were distracting from the very important business involving Kyle Beach, right? They didn't want to look like they were trying to get the, you know, turn the page on the headline. That may have bought Jeremy Culleton a little bit of extra time. But yeah, it was, you could see at that point that team with that coach was not working at that point anymore.
Yeah. You know, one of the great stories around this Jets team is this year's addition, unlike last year's addition, and we all understand why, whether it's, you know, the trade, COVID, the injury, all of it, the resurgence of Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, this is, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the Pierre-Luc Dubois they thought they were getting last season. 16 points in 17 games, you know, big, strong, you know, 6'4", 215 pounds centerman. Like, this is the guy they traded Line A for, right?
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, I think he may even be more than what they thought they were getting. Now, not that they didn't think he could be more. I mean, he's a young guy. You know, that he was the youngest guy on the Jets roster last season. We take a look at a young guy, a rookie like Logan Stanley. He's younger than he is. So, yeah. So, I mean, he's got lots of room to grow, and especially when you're that size, you know, there's a lot of room for your game to grow. But the one thing that that I think is really interesting is there was a lot of experiments that happened early on this team that I don't think would have happened if Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele don't lose some time to being out with COVID. And one of the things that you end up finding in you know, the forced experiments there is this chemistry that exists with Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois. And the interesting part about that is I do really think it's been interesting to see the change in Kyle Connor's game. It's a lot more complex, a lot more 3D. And I do think we have seen, I've talked with, you know, my colleague Ken Weeb, another Sportsnet guy in this market. We've had extensive conversations. Mm-hmm. This is the best version of Kyle Connor we've seen before. Yeah, he's putting up the points, and points are a good, you know, marker to, you know, to tell us what a player is doing. But Kyle Connor, this is the best version of him we've seen playing hockey. And he's talked about playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois and how that's kind of opened up his part, that part of his game. So, you know, not only is Pierre-Luc Dubois coming out and doing what he's doing, but he's helping to take really, really great players in this organization and take their game to another level. So when you get the guys who are not only good, but they make the players around them better, that's everything you can ask for. And that's been Pierre-Luc Dubois this season.
Yeah. You know, and I wonder, he'll be a restricted, not an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. Has there been much talk about an extension for Pierre-Luc Dubois right now? Do you know where Cheveldayoff is at with the extension for this centerman?
There hasn't been a lot of conversation about it. I think it's something they don't want to deal with until the off season. And if I were Pierre-Luc Dubois playing the way I am, I don't think I'd want to have any conversations about it. I'd want to let my play kind of speak for myself for a while here, because the more games he can put up, you know, playing the way that he is right now, the more his value is just going to go up and up and up. I mean, we've had some conversations about what it's going to cost for a player like that, that young, that big, a first-line centerman who's scoring the way that he is, playing the game that he does. I mean, would it be surprising for him to get $10 million a year? I think on the open market, he could get that. So that becomes the question. Is that the Winnipeg Jets have done a phenomenal job of getting players at value contracts. It's what Kevin Cheveldayoff does best, and Kevin Cheveldayoff does a lot of stuff really, really well. But that's the question. Is one, the way that this team is constructed with all the players that it has, and it's got a lot of really great players on this roster, and even though they've got, you know, so many good players on good contracts, they just have so many good players that's put them up against the cap. So where they're going to find the space to do that, that gets a little bit tricky because they've got a lot of players locked up now. May have to make some moves to have him fit or get him to take a team-friendly contract, and every time we think that that's not possible, Kevin Cheveldayoff seems to pull it off again.
You know, sometimes we see with various teams that there is one player who has the max contract, a contract past which the team will not go. Do you think that is Blake? Maybe Winnipeg's not one of those teams, and to your point, they end up, you know, doubling Pierre-Luc Dubois' money and end up giving him $10 million, and he blows right by Blake Wheeler at 8.25. Do you know if the team is existing on a sort of no one gets more than Blake does idea?
I think it has in the past. I think that that would be a very flawed argument if you're Pierre-Luc Dubois. And I mean, I think the reason for that would be, you know, when a lot of these contracts were made, Blake Wheeler was the standard on this team, right? Like he was making that money, but he was showing every night that he was the leader on the team. He was the best player on the team. He drove the team. As a mid 30-year-old, that is becoming less and less the case. I mean, Mark Scheifele, I would think, would be the standard of who the best player on this team would be, but he is being pushed by the likes of Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois. So, I mean, at one time, I think you could look at Blake Wheeler and make that argument. But we saw what happened in the market this last offseason with defensemen and how much money they were making. A guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois is worth a certain number on the market here. And I don't think that the players' union is going to be happy with him coming to them and saying, well, in Winnipeg, they tell me I can't make less than Blake Wheeler or more than Blake Wheeler, so I'm going to have to take this number. I couldn't see anyone happy with that in the players' union. So it's been an argument in the past. It's been an effective argument. I think it played a role on a number of contracts, including someone like Kyle Connor's contract. But I think that, you know, playing that card, if it's been played a number of times in the past, I think it may be a little bit too worn out to play this time around.
What do you expect tonight from the Pittsburgh Penguins? We saw them on Hockey Night Saturday. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins are one of the more well-covered teams in the NHL. There's not a lot of secrets. Like, nothing's really going to surprise you about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They get headlines. They get coverage. Everybody knows everything about the Pittsburgh Penguins. What do you expect tonight when they face off against the Jets?
Well, I think they're going to try and do exactly what they did the last couple of games against the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think they want this to be a ground-down affair. We just finished, I was just talking with the players before I hopped on the call here, and they're very, very aware of Winnipeg's transition game. They call it elite. They know they're highly offensive players. I think they've found some success in the last couple of games, you know, against Toronto, kind of just getting the puck and holding on to the puck and not allowing Toronto to get going with it. I think that they're looking for that kind of match. And that's interesting because it's one thing that the Winnipeg Jets have shown this year, and I think it's the true success of the Winnipeg Jets so far this year and something they think is going to allow them to succeed in the playoffs this season. But as highly offensive as these players are and as many points as guys like Kyle Connor or Pierre-Luc Dubois or even Andrew Kopp are putting up this season, when they get into those grinded out games where it's, you know, 1-0, you know, exactly what we saw the other night against the Edmonton Oilers, they're committed to that game. They'll put the personal stats and the ability to score on the back burner and play the game the right way, and then try and, if they can get that advantage, if they can score first and then grind out another one and then have the other team up their risk profile, that's when the Jets can really burn you and turn it up and score a lot of points on you. If I was a betting man, I would put a bet on another low scoring grind out affair, because I think that's what the Penguins think they're going to succeed with here, and the Jets are okay with staying with that and comfortable in it, and don't push it to try and run the score up if they don't need to.
We look forward to the game. Winnipeg Jets and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sean Reynolds has been with me. Sean, thanks as always. Thanks so much for this. And if you feel like loading up Innocence by Harlequin on your Spotify after this, by all means, go take a trip down musical memory lane, my friend.
Jeff, this
I'll be
is
doing
Winnipeg.
The same. I'll be doing
Jeff,
the same.
Is, Harlequin is on the radio here 3 to 4 times a day. You may have not heard that for a while. I think I heard it on the car coming in this morning.
That's awesome. Well, it's yeah, listen, a great song is a great song. Sean, thanks so much for this as always, pal. You be good.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Talk about the Winnipeg Jets and Harlequin. Man, if Eminence Front wasn't the theme song for this one, for this program, you can make a case for Harlequin. I just got a couple of moments left here in the program. Maddie, how was today's show? Why don't you do the audit on the first day of the week?
It was great. We got some good information. Stewie always coming with the fire, telling that, you know, he wants everybody to get all the money. So that
always.
We knew.
I wish he was a GM. I wish someone would give him the keys to something. He would be just so much fun.
He's struggling with his team's power play right now. Let's not give him the keys to an NHL team yet.
It's a good point. Zaki coming in to help out.
And Sean Reynolds just talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois and what his next deal might look like. There's some interesting tidbits in there. There really was. Like, what could he get on the open market? Sean said maybe 10. Wow.
Well, he won't hit open market. I mean, he's restricted, so he's not going to hit the open market. But, I mean, you look at a player like him, 23 years old, with that skill set, that production, you know, you win down the middle. Phew, yeah, that size. Man, that guy is having a hell of a season for the Jets. And, he's going to make himself a very tidy sum. I want to thank Sean Reynolds for stopping by. Anthony Stewart, as Maddie just mentioned. Jeff Baker from Seattle Times and Elliot Friedman. Thanks to our producer, Matt Marchese. Our musical director, Lance Kennedy. Back tomorrow.